This is Zeph Feldman, the Jazz Detective, just taking a moment to remind you that I've got six new releases coming out this Record Store Day, Saturday, April 22nd, and I'm talking at Nate about them on the Vinyl Guide.
This episode is brought to you by Seems Easy Record Sleeve Repair Strips. If you collect used records, you need some Seems Easy strips handy for record sleeve repair. They're super easy to use and repair those seam splits to make them like new. Ask your record store for Seems Easy or go to seamseasy.com. Seems Easy with two Z's, seamseasy.com. And now, on with the show. Ah, well, hot diggity dog. Hi, everyone. It's Nate. Welcome to episode 390 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And it is Record Store Day week eve, and we are highlighting some amazing releases coming out this Record Store Day, April 22nd, 2023. And today, Zeph Feldman, the Jazz Detective, is here once again to give us the skinny on six releases he has coming out. Artists like Bill Evans, Eric Dolphy, Chet Baker, Shirley Scott, Sonny Stitt, and Walter Bishop Jr. And today, Zeph talks about each of these releases, why they're important, the journey from bringing them from the Island of Lost tapes directly to your turntable, and lots more. Plus, we talked to Zeph about some of his other adventures, some sadly unsalvageable finds, finding lost photographs along with the recordings and more. Zeph is an amazing dude, always positive, always on the hunt for tapes, and keen to talk about jazz and music anytime. So enjoy this episode and grab some of Zeph's productions on Record Store Day, April 22nd. And finally, if you love jazz, we've got a lot of other episodes of The Vinyl Guide awaiting your earholes, freely available interviews simply by following our podcast in your podcast app. You can listen to interviews like episode 231 with jazz and Blue Note legend Lou Donaldson. That's episode 231 of The Vinyl Guide. Episode 224 with bass genius Ron Carter and his life of jazz. Michael Cascuna of Mosaic Records, episode 173. Joe Harley of Blue Note and Tone Poet fame, episode 157. Don Was, president of Blue Note Records, episode 105, and many, many more. Simply subscribe or follow the Vinyl Guide podcast in your podcast app. Scroll, download, listen, and enjoy. Alrighty, enough of the jibber jabber. I'm going to get out of the way and let you guys listen to the wisdom of Mr. Zeph Feldman here on The Vinyl Guide. Alright, this week on The Vinyl Guide, we welcome back to the show our friend, your friend, Mr. Zeph Feldman, the Jazz Detective. Good to see you again, Zeph. Happy Record Store Day week.
Right back at you, Nate. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Look, I know it's a real busy period for you right now. For people who are just getting familiar with Zeph, Zeph is the Jazz Detective. He searches for lost, unheard, and historically important jazz performances and makes them available to music fans and nerds via his network of record labels, who are also run by largely music fans and nerds. Is that a fair description of what you do day to day, Zeph?
Oh, I would say so. Absolutely. We're wrapped up in passion and working with music that we nerd out on all the time. It's what we do.
Always searching those lost trunks and attics for those tapes. Now, I want to get into the releases this year. You've got six releases for Record Store Day. Each one of them is very special. Before we do, I just want to get a quick, maybe spend a minute or two talking about the recent passing of Ahmad Jamal. That was just a few days ago. I know you'd worked with him many, many times. Do you want to spend a minute or two kind of giving us a bit of a perspective on the life and work and your experience with Ahmad Jamal?
Well, that's very kind of you to ask. I'll just say, like a lot of us, it's been a really, it's sad. It's sad. This guy is he was one of the greatest living legends in this music, a pioneer. He changed music in many ways, and his use of space and arranging and his music, and people have used the term chamber jazz. To me, he's been a figure that's been a part of my life since I was a youngster. I listened to his music in my mom and dad's record collection. And we had the good fortune of working with Mr. Jamal When I say we, I'm talking about me and my team. And in this case, the folks at Elemental Music, we produced two albums that came out last year called Emerald City Nights, which were these live recordings captured at the Penthouse Club in Seattle starting in 1964 and eventually taking us all the way to 1968. But we put out last November these two separate 2LP, 2CD releases of the mod captured live in concert. And I was just reflecting on this yesterday on my social media that it was just a really blessing to have this experience to work with someone who you greatly admire. Ahmad Jamal is just such an important figure in this music. And we collaborated. We found these recordings. We brought them to him. And he took the wheel, like he drove the car. He went through all the music with us. We came up with editorial and photos and design for the package, soup to nuts. He was in the front seat with us. And it was really a joy working with him. And it was actually a great process. And I want to thank, again, his daughter, Samara Jamal, and his associates, Laura Hess-Hay, his manager and associates, Andrew Stamen and Maurice Montoya, who believed in the work that I was doing and wanted us to meet up. And he was happy. He was really proud. You know, it doesn't always work out that way, but it was a delight working with him. And he was passionate about this music. He'll be missed. I'm at a loss for words. There's so much we could take a whole hour here and I could just give you, you know, but he really matters and his music is timeless. And to work with him on the last productions of his life are just, I'm speechless. And it was just great. So grateful to have had the opportunity.
I read, I think he was 92 years old. How were his ears in recent years? Still on, still active?
I think his ears were great. In fact, when we were going through the recordings, Mr. Jamal, during the mastering process, he listened to each reference copy every time we went through this. And there were little things here and there, adding certain touches to certain instruments, whether it was bringing something up or he had a methodology in what he was doing. And we allowed him to really take the lead. And, you know, he'd made so many records, this guy, he was a pro in the process. So we all worked together. It was really good. It worked just fine. And he played a significant part. But yeah, man, his ears were doing just fine. And I'm sure his ears were smoking when he listened to how he sounded as a young man at this really important juncture of these recordings. There's recordings in Emerald City Nights. The first volume is really, I mean, it's just an important period. There were so many studio recordings that he was making in this period, and we had the live experience. And I'm happy to say that we're going to be bringing a third and final volume of Emerald City Nights that'll be coming out later this year, we're planning for. So there'll be more information. But, you know, right now I'm just kind of, it's all kind of sinking in and how heavy it was, you know, just great. Wow.
Well, thanks for sharing that that bit of a scoop. We've got that to look forward to. And thanks to you and the team for making Mr. Jamal's recordings available. So let's talk Record Store Day, Zev. You've got six releases this year. And holy moly, you are absolutely setting the bar high for everyone, including yourself. Six releases for Record Store Day. Was it planned to be this way, or did it just kind of all the stars just aligned over the past few months to make this happen?
It's funny. It just works out that way sometimes. You know, when we're working on the projects over any course of time, you know, things come together. It is always a process and ups and downs, and we finally get paperwork done, and when do we start? And we really don't know. I never want to press. You know, I want to take our time to do what's right, to get the job done, to really, you know, spend as much quality time with each of these productions. But it worked out this way. And I'm astounded. Six. And I look back at the last year. This is stuff I've been working on for the last year and a half. And it's very exciting to see it come to fruition. It just worked out that way.
Wow. And this year you've got a Bill Evans LP. We'll talk about each of these, by the way. Fantastic Chet Baker record I was listening to last night. It's absolutely gorgeous. Ooh. Eric Dolphy, Musical Prophet, a second pressing of that. And three from the Left Bank. Let's start there, if that's all right.
Sure.
Let's talk about the Left Bank and why that location is so important. And why do we have so many tapes and recordings from the Left Bank?
We have so many tapes and recordings from the Left Bank because of a gentleman named Vernon Welsh, who was, well, he was a car salesman during the week. And on the weekends, he was part of this organization of individuals, multicultural, diverse, called the Left Bank Jazz Society, that was in Baltimore, that really started back in the mid-1960s at a club called, they had a place called the Madison Club. They hosted some concerts on, and then many, many concerts for many years at 1711 North Charles Street in Baltimore, at a place that became known as the Famous Ballroom. And I've been kind of taken with the Famous Ballroom for a number of years. I have to think back to my record geeking years, going back to really the early to mid 1990s, when Verve Records put out two CDs, I should say, worth of material from the great saxophonist Joe Henderson. One was called Four, and the other one was called Straight No Chaser. And these were tapes that Joe Henderson had made at this same place, the Famous Ballroom. And that was, by the way, with the Wynton Kelly Trio, with Paul Chambers and Billy Higgins. Worth checking those out and revisiting. But it really became my kind of first introduction to the venue. And then I used to hear about it from different people. There were photographs online that had circulated, I'd say later in the 1990s. I also became familiar with the Left Bank. There was a recording with the Wynton Kelly Trio with George Coleman on VJ Japan. I had acquired a copy of in like the early 2000s. And then Joel Dorn, the late, great, legendary producer, who was a master producer. He, on his Label M imprint, ushered in a whole bunch of these Left Bank recordings. There were about 10 of them, I believe. Gene Ammons, Sonny Stitt, Freddie Hubbard, Jimmy Heath, Stan Getz with Richie Bayrack and Jack DeJohnette, Dave Holland. It was great, right? And what did they do? They made an event. Joel Dorn put out numerous titles. And it brought awareness to this organization. And that's really resonated with me for years. And I'm from the Washington, D.C. area. I grew up in the state of Maryland. I'm about 45 minutes right now from Baltimore. But the Left Bank was such an important organization of these group of people that came together, a nonprofit, to put together all these concerts. But it goes from the mid-60s onward, and there is a tape archives. Sometime about 7 years ago, I was introduced to a gentleman named John Fowler. He was one of the officers at the Left Bank organization. And over the years, it's really only a handful of living members that are left. Well, Mr. Fowler is the co-custodian with me of the tape archives. And about 7 years ago, thanks to some referrals I had, a gentleman named Joe Lee, the owner of Joe's Record Paradise, and his son Johnson runs it now, but Joe, who is a dear friend for many years, along with another gentleman, Bertrand Uberall, put in a word with me, with his Mr. Fowler, said, "Zeb, we know you're doing this archival work, finding these tapes. There are some tapes sitting over in these hills over here, and you need to talk to this man." So we were introduced. And Nate, for several years, I was taking suitcases full of reel-to-reels back and forth from Baltimore to Los Angeles. I'd come to Maryland. I'd stay with my mom and dad. Then I'd always drive over to John Fowler's house, bring a suitcase, and I'd have to do the hand inspection with the TSA to make sure that the tapes didn't go through the X-ray machine. You'd see me there for like an hour. People be like, "What is this guy doing?" But anyways, we, thanks to George Klaban at Resonance Records, who offered his studio time with his engineers to help us digitize this audio, we were able to go through it, kind of catalog it, vet it, listen, get an idea of what was really there. And at Resonance, as it just turned out, we were very focused on some other projects that were prioritized. And then my friend Corey Weeds, Cellar Live Music Group, he got bit by the bug big time. Corey wanted to get into this archival work too that I'd been doing with Resonance, and he said, hey, could we do something together? And sure enough, so we started this imprint called Reel to Reel, which has now had several releases out over the years. Corey stepped up and really took a lead in terms of finding homes for many of these recordings that needed to come out. First, there was the Etta Jones with the Cedar Walton Trio release called On a Sunday Afternoon, which came out a few years ago. Then about a year and a half ago, I want to say, we put out Understanding from the great drummer Roy Brooks on this explosive recording at the Left Bank with the great Woody Shaw on trumpet, Carlos Garnett, Harold Mayburn on piano, Cecil McBee, all your friends. I mean, like, it was just astounding, all this great music that was going on. But Corey and I started really sinking our teeth into saying, hey, what can we put out from this archives? And he, it, you know, there's a lot of generosity from the labels. It is not for the faint at heart. Getting behind, putting the resources together to bring one of these projects to the marketplace. And Corey was very generous and said, let's do this. So over the last few years, we've been working on this group of tapes that John had recently found, which included these releases that we have here now. We have Sonny Stitt, Boppin' in Baltimore. We have Shirley Scott, Queen Talk at the Left Bank. And we have Walter Bishop Jr., Bish at the Bank. And these are all very important recordings. We can talk about each one of them. Happy to do that. But, you know, it was just like it was advantageous. And there is an important message between the music and the legacy of the organization.
The archive itself, how big is the archive? And what was the motivation for making those tapes back in the original day?
Well, the archive itself is really, I don't want to throw a wet blanket on anybody's dreams. We always envision, like, you know, you're walking into a bank vault, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? There are places like that in the world, like ENA in France, with the ORTF and the Radio France archives. They have multiple facilities. But the tapes were at John Fowler's house, stored in these tubs in very temperature-controlled climate. Don't worry. It wasn't everything was recorded, but probably about maybe a few hundred tapes, I would say, perhaps. And, you know, the motivation was this, right? So they made these recordings, by the way, anytime that the tape was running. They always asked the artist if it was okay. Sometimes the artist would say, please don't record. But generally, a lot of the artists were okay with it, and it worked like this. There was a tape made for the organization, and there was a tape that was a copy that was given to the artist. Now, that's how the Joe Henderson recordings came to light, because Joe Henderson had been given a set of tapes. But they made these recordings because the individuals that were working these events, they were working it. They were preoccupied. They didn't always have a chance to sit back and soak in the music. So aside from hosting these concerts every Sunday afternoon, where families were invited, I mean, it was quite a happening going on there. And then what would happen is they would have a playback the following Wednesday after the staff meeting, so that people that were at the event could even listen to the music again. Then Mr. Welsh stored the tapes. And that's it. You know, they're safeguarded. They're not something that the public has access to. It took building of trust and a relationship to get me to the point where they would allow me to check these tapes out. But again, checking them out with the point of having them digitized. It's been a long road, but it's exciting. And you know, I'm glad these documents exist in the first place. It's really miraculous.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we'll start, maybe we'll spend a few minutes on each release. We'll start with this Walter Bishop Jr., Bish at the Bank, 66 of 67. That is a phenomenal recording. Brilliant player. Walter Bishop, he's not one of the jazz musicians that kind of comes top of mind all the time. He's always kind of been one of those guys, at least in my understanding, has been a little bit below the radar, but what a fantastic piano player. And this is a tremendous record. Tell me a little bit about this album.
Well, these were some tapes that I was really taken with. And so was Corey, by the way. You know, You're right. Like record collecting, we see his records. This was a man who came out of the bebop era. You know, he played with Charlie Parker. He was on that scene. He comes from a different time and different tradition. And when you look at some of the great jazz pianists, I think that pound for pound, he is really a heavyweight and someone that never really got his. Never got his due. And I think if you're a connoisseur, I think a lot of us are going to flock to these releases because we know it's something great. And there have been quite a bunch of recordings that are out there, even on the Xanadu label, on Muse Records. And of course, a lot of folks know him because of the Black Jazz record label resurgence. He had a few records recordings for that imprint as well. But you know, he matters. I was just like, there were these tapes that were sitting there that said Walter Bishop. And I said, this is really rare. And I said, this is really important. And this guy doesn't get talked about enough. And Corey totally felt it. And when we listened to music, we were taken with it. We also really love the fact that on the front line, you've got Harold Vick on tenor saxophone, who a lot of people know from the Steppin' Out release on Blue Note. But he made a number of recordings for Muse. He even played with Jack DeJohnette. And he was a guy on the scene in New York in the 60s. And I just like all of your friends are here. Dick Burke on drums is a guy that like Albin Queen talks to me about as was a really made a splash on the scene when he came out and when he hit the scene. These were just, you know, these were the cats. And you at the Bleft Bank, you had a train ride down from New York City or from Philadelphia, which is where a lot of the musicians stem from. And there was a major artery of talent that was able to come into Baltimore. I mean, guys that toured the whole world were coming into Baltimore because of this organization. So I'm really happy about this. On the Walter Bishop Jr., by the way, the liner notes are written by the great Ted Pankin. And there's a bunch of other testimonials and photographs. And, you know, we just tried to put together something that would really celebrate the memories. And I think if you like Walter Bishop Jr., I think if you like this music, I like if you like jazz piano, there are a lot of reasons why you should check out this project. And as usual, the booklets provide a lot of historical context in telling the narrative of why it's important too. We like to build great records, but I also like to really curate great books and learning experiences that go along with it. Something to occupy you while you're listening to the music before and after. But I'd hope that people are going to want to pull this one off the shelf and keep listening to it. It's a
I
great
think
one.
I totally agree. This Bish at the Bank album is absolutely going to be heavily spun in my house. And that's another thing about the productions that you're involved with, Zev. It's not just let's take the tape and let's put it on a record and put it out and move to the next one. They're curated. The booklets have so much information, so content rich. It really is like, you know, you could spend an evening just diving deep into this artist, into these records, learning about them, reading all the different perspectives, and they're very comprehensive booklets. So the work that you do in deep diving on these is I've got so much respect for it and so much appreciation because I learned so much while going through this. So there it is, Walter Bishop Jr., Bish at the Bank. Listeners, please grab this one if you see it. It is a banger. Another Left Bank one was Shirley Scott from the Left Bank. This one's from 1973. This seems to show a different side of hers.
I think personally she was a trailblazer on her instrument, dominated with a landscape by so many men, frankly. And there's also Rhoda Scott and Amina Claudine Myers. There are a lot of other females that play this instrument. But she, the records that she made in the 1960s, guys like you and me, and a lot of my other record collecting friends, and especially Corey Weeds, we've been collecting her records for years. She is just something else. This is a great set. You know, she was married, by the way, to Stanley Turrentine. She was the musical director, I also think, for You Bet Your Life on the game show when it came back in the late 1980s. But Shirley Scott really matters. You know, she is a important artist. She has a recorded legacy right now. There's a lot of folks that are getting exposed to her for the first time because of this new craft box set of her and Eddie Lockjaw Davis, someone who she also collaborated with as well. But she's a timeless artist. She matters. Like, she is a musician who Corey and I get excited about. And I just know, like, I just come across so many of her records, and they're always a joy to listen to. Yeah, you know, the organ is definitely a link to gospel. There's blues in there too, and on this recording, some high octane grooving, if yeah. I may say, including Impressions, which is absolutely burning. But you know, this comes from a recording from August 20th, 1972, at the famous ballroom. She was living in Philadelphia at the time. But this recording, man, heavyweights, George Coleman on tenor saxophone, Bobby Durham on drums, and a guest vocalist, a friend of the band and of the Left Banc, was the great vocalist Ernie Andrews. And he lays down here as well. But, you know, it's, like I said, great way to find a good tape, a tape that really spoke to us. We listened to the music. We were taken by it. And then Corey played it for the late, great Joey DeFrancesco, someone who was friends with Miss Scott, someone who played the instrument and spoke that same language. And, you know, we oftentimes do want to get a second opinion. We want someone that can listen to the music and read the tea leaves. But the music here really checked out for us in a great way. And it's on fire. And I got to tell you, on drums, Bobby Durham, who is really another underrated master. I mean, maybe you listen to him with Monty Alexander or Oscar Peterson. He is on fire, pushing. And it's fantastic. A. Scott Galloway did the liner notes here. Tim Warfield also, an interview with him and an interview with Joey DeFrancesco. And, oh, man, I mean, we even found photographs that had never been published before. From photographer Raymond Ross, we came across this photo session thanks to Cynthia Sesso at CTS Images, who is one of our contacts. We work with a lot of different photographers and different archives, just like the music, and putting these together is a big process. I'm really proud of this one a lot, too. Like I said, like when you're into the music and you love the artist, finding something that hasn't been out there before and getting a chance to realize it just hits it's a very personal sort of connection, and that's what it's been like for us on this one. So
yeah. That drummer, boy, that was I wasn't quite ready for that. That is a heavy hitter. So yeah, Shirley Scott at the Left Banc. Now, you mentioned some of the photos, and again, with your booklets being, you know, so comprehensive with information and imagery, were there many pictures of these Left Banc sessions while they were being recorded?
I'm sad to say, first of all, we don't have the original prints or negatives. And what we've had are copies of the Left Banc had their own yearbooks that they did every year. They had a chronicle going back from the very beginning of all the concerts with all the side people that played on them. And then you would see photos from the shows and they would be in these yearbooks. I'm sad to say that we've done a lot of research and it's been difficult to find practically any pictures, but you know, there are these yearbooks that have some of the images, but they would be like third, fourth generation. It would be very difficult to curate them. But instead, what did we do? We found previously unpublished pictures from guys like Don Schlitten, who, like, you know, shot her for Prestige albums and designed her covers. And we were able to pull from other very important sources to really kind of recreate what the experience is. John Sellards, by the way, we need to give him a shout out. John Sellards is a tremendous designer that I've had a chance to work with for a number of years now, and so is Corey. And John has this unbelievable, he's such a skilled guy and recreating feelings and emotions. And I would say, hey, would love something kind of, hey, maybe a little late 60s prestige a la early 70s Muse cobblestone. Could you come up with something like that? And you know, like, he just knows what he's doing. And it's all about the teamwork of people that we work with, and having these sort of, you know, understanding and feel for all these components and aspects that go into these projects. But, you know, the aesthetics, the feeling, I really have said this before. I want to knock people over the head. When they're lining up for record store day, I want something to be screaming like, man, this just looks cool. I'm really building something that guys like Corey and I shop like. This is how we are. If it's something that appeals to the fans, but it's good. It's good for you, and it tastes good, and it's wonderful. So
it goes down well. All right, rounding out the Left Bank collection is the Sonny Stitt. Bop It in Baltimore. And this is on a label called the Jazz Detective label. Any idea who runs that?
Just some guy, just me. But no, I want to say I'm very lucky, Nate. Last year I had the good fortune with my team, including Zach Shelby Cisco and my dear friend Joel Weinstein. But the guys at Elemental Music, who everyone is getting familiar with now, probably more and more, a lot of brand awareness. They're doing a lot of reissues in the marketplace. You'll see Motown and all sorts of interesting things that have been reissued. Chess Catalog, Howlin' Wolf, Chuck Berry. And we started a label together, and I didn't want to just do a label last year. I wanted to do a music group because I thought maybe I'm going to have different identities. But we came up with a company that I've called Deep Digs Music Group. And under the Deep Digs umbrella, and I want to, you know, thanks to Jordi Soleil and Carlos Augustin at Elemental for believing in me, we've created this label group. And this are, you know, we put out Ahmad Jamal, Emerald City Nights last year, volume one, volume two. And we're going to talk about Chet Baker in a minute. But we have this Boppin' in Baltimore. Which is on my label, Jazz Detective. I'm very proud. Sonny Stitt is an artist, again, that Corey and I get bonkers about. We get excited. I mean, this was a man that left an unbelievable footprint in the music world in terms of a recorded legacy. He recorded for a lot of labels, but he was a gunslinger. He was a master saxophonist. That from the technical skill, from the feeling, come on, man. This was a guy that, you know, was a peer with Charlie Parker, and he comes from, again, that different era and holding a tradition like Walter Bishop Jr. too. Barry Harris is another guy. They used to have that slogan. They would say all the time, maybe you've seen a pin with it written on it, Bird Lives. And Sonny Stitt was a guy who really championed the bebop tradition, but playing blues. And Sonny Stitt just blows us away. Like it is amazing when you listen to him and just naturally what he could perform. He was a regular at the Left Bank. And as Katia, his daughter, and Jason, son of Sonny Stitt, will tell you, hey man, those shows at the Left Bank were really personal for us because dad was on the road all the time. They lived in the DC Baltimore area. So when dad was playing, they had a chance to go to these shows. But he has a very important recorded legacy. His contribution to this music has aged so well. He is one of the masters. And he played tenor sax. He played alto sax. He played this thing called the varietone, which a lot of people know about as well. And I think that he was really a master who, again, we're going to use this vehicle, Record Store Day, this event to bring this music out, that we're going to celebrate the greatness of these guys. And Sonny Stitt moves me. I think his music is going to continue to move people. And I'd like to say, like, you know, I hope that it's going to turn some people on. Maybe some people don't have a Sonny Stitt recording. This is a great one to dig into. And he's playing tenor here, which is not always the case as well, tenor and alto. So
that's what I like about Record Store Day so much is you get the opportunity to try something maybe you wouldn't on any other day, right? You know, I mean, we've heard the name Sonny Stitt. We've heard a little bit about Shirley Scott. But when you walk into the record store on Record Store Day and you see this beautiful package there and you're like, oh, you know, you get caught up in the moment, you grab it and you take it away, you really learn something, and especially with the booklet and everything that contributes to it. So I think it's a great opportunity for people who aren't familiar with Sonny Stitt. I'm only casually familiar, but after listening to Boppin' in Baltimore, I think I'm going to go a little bit deeper down the rabbit hole. So again, credit to you and the team for bringing these recordings to the forefront.
Thank you.
Okay, a few more to get to. Where do we go? Let's go to Chet Baker, Blue Room, from the Netherlands. Now, the source of this. This was actually some sessions that Chet had played that were for radio. Is that right?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay, grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 used record into a $50 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with two Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. Let's go to Chet Baker, Blue Room, from the Netherlands. Now, the source of this was actually some sessions that Chet had played that were for radio. Is that right?
That is correct. These were originally recorded for KRO NCRV, which is a radio company in the Netherlands. And man, so the journey on Blue Room started in the winter of 2022. I remember being out on this long walk, talking to my associate, Frank Jochemsen, who is with the Netherlands Jazz Archives in Amsterdam. And we had previously collaborated on Sonny Rollins in Holland. He did a great job unearthing a lot of recordings and music there. Then we also worked on putting out an official release of Bill Evans's recordings from 1969, recorded at Vara, that was called Behind the Dykes. And when I was starting my new label, you know, when you work with certain individuals at record companies, so much of what we do is drawn on the personal passion, and finding a fit can be like, hey, we know that that executive over there, that the guy, the producer that we'd be working with, they love that artist. And I can't think of a bigger Chet Baker fan than my dear friend, Jordi Soleil. Jordi is the principal president of Elemental Music. We worked together co-founding the label about 10 or 11 years ago. First, we put out the Jimmy Giuffre New York concerts release. And again, I'm out on this walk. I'm talking to Frank. And I said, you know, I'm starting this new label group with Elemental. And I got to ask, do you have any Chet Baker? Because they are the biggest Chet Baker fans that you could find. Jordi loves Chet. He's such a Chet connoisseur. And we had previously put out in the spring of 2022, Chet Baker live in Paris with the folks at ENA, these Radio France tapes, you may recall. It was a 3-LP set. And we have been trying to find recordings. Well, as luck would have it, Frank unearthed these recordings that had never been out before. But like you were saying before, they're studio sessions. It's not just a live tape. It's almost a different sort of artistic statement when you're in the studio versus being on the bandstand. And these are actually some very delightful recordings of Chet made in a period that, you know, I admire Chet Baker's like later period almost as much as I do the earlier stuff. He has such moments of genius and brilliance in his music. This was a guy that, by the way, didn't read music. He had the intonation, the feeling. He was a masterful musician. And you can even like read liner notes from Richie Bayrak, who will demonstrate, and you'll read this essay and you'll learn more about the lessons that he learned playing with Chet. But we found these recordings. They checked out incredibly well. We actually played them for a couple of the musicians that were on the recording, the American pianist Phil Markowitz, and also the bassist Jean-Louis Rosenfoss, who lives in, I believe, in France. Anyways, we let them hear it, and they were like, man, he sounds really great here. And, you know, we knew we had a really important document, and my label was coming together at that time, so we decided that we would all put this on the Jazz Detective imprint. So this is the along with the new Sonny Stitt, this is the fourth album on the Jazz Detective label. I'm very proud about. But these are, again, two sessions that were done. One on April 10th of 79, again with Phil Markowitz, Rosenfoss, and drummer Charles Rice. And then they came back in November of that year with a Dutch rhythm section as well. And this is the combination of these two sessions. It's a studio recording. It sounds wonderful. He sounds great. And I think it's a really good dose for folks to get of, if you're not familiar, just the magic that exists in his later output of recordings. A lot of maturity, just master performances from a master musician. And I'm very taken by this. But, you know, like all these projects, it took a great team of us to put it together, and Team Elemental. And Burton Yount, by the way, and Gordon G did the design on this release as well and putting it together. And again, same methodology. We wanted to have a lot of different interviews and spoke to Randy Brecker for this. We spoke, you know, with Richie Bayrak. We have a whole bunch of different, you know, testimonials here that talk about it. And also a gentleman who is an author on Chet Baker, Jerome DeVolk as well, who is a scholar on Chet Baker. So we really tried to put together all of the voices, some interesting testimonials, wonderful pictures that were taken at the session. So again, it's got all these kind of touchstones here, but yeah. I think that people will enjoy. I'm really proud about this one. It's really nice, you know, but again, Chet Baker, check out all of his periods. You're going to find a lot of joy there. And anyways, this is some great stuff, if I might say so myself.
Yeah. The one thing, obviously, the music is wonderful and the package is great. The one thing that really sticks out to me on this package are those pictures of Chet. And, you know, we just talked about, you know, sometimes it's hard to get pictures of the moment or of the gig or whatever, but these are actual photos of the sessions. It looks like there's two photos. One of them of Chet is absolutely haunting.
With the glasses? Yeah.
Yeah. That stare.
He's such an interesting mythological, you know, there's just something about his stature, his presence, one of the giants in this music. I'm at, again, a loss of words to kind of articulate his greatness. I think when you're a fan, you get it. And, you know, I'm just so happy that this exists in the first place and very proud and honored. This is the second official release that I've had a chance to work on with the estate of Chet Baker. Mm-hmm. You know, of all the projects that we do, we get those clearances and those permissions, and we worked with his family to put this out. So
now you mentioned you started this conversation in the winter of 2022. So this all came together, including the physical copies, by here we are in April. This is that went pretty quick from the standard fare, yeah?
Oh, well, you know, it's a good point you bring up something. So, you know, and I've learned this like working at Resonance, you know, some of these projects sometimes take years to come together. It really depends on different aspects and dynamics to a production. How many different permissions, how many different people, how quick are folks to respond? There's a lot of different nuances that go into getting the permissions. But, you know, I worked on a Jaco Pastorius project that took 6 years to come to fruition. Same for that Thad Jones, Mel Lewis, All My Yesterdays. You stay with them. But these, yeah, like these came together. There was something meant to be. The energies of the world worked their way and their magic, and it was meant to be. But, you know, it's funny. George Klaibin talks to me about this sometimes. We've talked about how, hey, you know, when something's meant to be, it's meant to be. And you know, you get emotionally wrapped up in these projects sometimes, and it can be heartbreak, and you're trying to incubate this project along. But these came together, and luckily we had already worked with Chet's family, so that was nice. We had already proved ourselves on the first release, so I felt was a great effort. And anyway, so here we are, and I'm looking at this photograph. Daryl Oakland, a legendary photographer, he took the pictures that we used on the front and back cover, and there were these sessions. He's wearing his hat. He looks awesome.
Yeah.
And he's so cool, man. He is the cool cat.
So even vinyl pressing, I mean, vinyl over the last few years, notoriously, you know, 8 to 12 months wait. It seems to be coming down quite a bit if you're able to create a package like that in under 8 months.
I think the time is kind of changing in the last month or two. It seems that capacity is opening up a little bit, because also it seems to me that there are also more pressing plants that are opening up to kind of take the pressure off of some of the marketplace. I mean, we felt that. Yeah, we were looking at 9 to 12 months. And you know what? That still is pretty much in the ballpark for what it is. Because when you're working on the manufacturing side, you're working on having to have all of your deliverables at the same time. You're delivering your audio and maybe your lacquers too, but you also have to have these massive presentations, these books, these gatefolds. Everything has to be assembled. And I'm talking about going through the process of being vetted and filtered as an editing staff, as all of our eyes are bleeding, reading over essays for the umpteenth million time. Oh my gosh, we caught something in that sentence right there. But it's really something though. But again, they're folks that we work with on our team that help us. But it's overwhelming. You go cuckoo just with all the steps that go into this. It's really hard to explain the process. There probably could be a book written on this, but to go through every little step, it's overwhelming. But again, I'm lucky because you know what? I'm one guy talking with you here, but it ain't just me. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, Zach Shelby Cisco. Thank you, Team Elemental. You know, thank you, Resonance Records and George Klaven and Sydney Lanix. Thank you, designers, John Sellards, Burton Yout. It's a crew, and we come together, and we've been doing this now. I mean, Zach and I have been working together, I think, 8, 9 years. And really, that was like I've said before, that's like when things really started hitting a stride, especially around 2015, 2016. But man, it's so much fun. So much fun. Anyways, so that's Chet Baker before I digress anymore.
Okay, well, you know, we're talking about the history of the labels. And of course, you know, this Bill Evans release, Treasures, this is your 8th or 9th production of the Bill Evans estate.
This is actually my 10th production.
You're in double digits.
And we'll be at the 11th later this year, because there's going to be another unissued recording that's never been out there. Not even the discographers have it. And it's great stuff. Well, okay. So let me tell you a story. Winter of 2022, I'm on another walk. And I got a phone call, I think one day, from Jordi calling me from Barcelona. Zev, we found something really amazing. He said, we found some Bill Evans, but nobody's got this. And it's recorded great, and the performances are absolutely wonderful. And we found these recordings made by a gentleman named Ole Matheson. He was a producer for Danish radio. And Mr. Matheson, you know, he was instrumental in having these separate sessions that were done with Bill Evans in solo piano, with the trio, and with different musicians, whether it was Eddie Gomez and Marty Morrell, or might I said, as far as I know, the only recordings, I think, of Niels Henning Orsted Pedersen on bass and the great Alan Dawson on drums. You have an orchestral, a large group ensemble with, you know, with Pelle Mickelberg. This is a 3 LP set that we called Treasures. And these really are treasures. They were a complete surprise and just astonishing to unearth this. But guess what? Jazz Detective didn't find us. Jordy Soleil and Carlos Augustin found us, and they came to me knowing that I had this deep relationship with the Evans estate and that we had done so much work. And hey, at Elemental Music, following previous year, we had done Behind the Dykes. So the stage was set. We went to the estate. We were able to play this for them. They loved it. We did a deal to put this out. We were able to get all the permissions. You know, we were able to, you know, work with the musicians and work with the families. And it was, you know, when you're hearing back from guys like Eddie Gomez and Morrell that are listening to themselves, and when they respond favorably, there was just, you know, just good feelings all the way around, because we knew this music was really special. And it's like some of the best of Bill Evans. You get like different tastes in different instrumentation, different configurations of these groups. And we brought back Mark Myers to write the liner notes as well. He's someone that I regard as being an expert on Bill Evans, truly a scholar, somebody that can, again, I say, read the tea leaves. And we were all just taken by this music. So we put this together. I think originally we were going to put this out last year, but lo and behold, manufacturing, hello, like we're talking about, it became an issue for us. And we waited, and we put out Treasures Now. It's going to be a 3-LP set mastered by Bernie Grundman. You know, rare photos that you see in there, interviews. It's with different folks and testimonials. It's a great package. I'm just really proud about this, and just with this ongoing work that we've been able to do with Bill Evans's family. They support these projects. They're very involved. And like everything else, again, how can I not mention Record Store Day? I'm just so grateful to the entire organization. They have helped us give birth. It's literally like giving birth to all these projects. And there's so many different pieces that have to line up. But anyways, the Bill Evans is a great project. By the way, a couple of interviews in there too. I should mention, we spoke with the legendary Rand Blake and pianist Rand Blake and pianist Matthew Shipp also, that get a chance to share their feelings about Bill Evans. And we tried our best to build a good, nice package that we hope everyone will enjoy.
It wouldn't be Record Store Day without a Zev Feldman Bill Evans release. So it's so you know, the Bill Evans titles are always so unique, and I like the fact that they've been relatively consistent over the last few years. I noticed with this year, the sixth record we'll talk about here, Eric Dolphy, Musical Prophet. That's the second pressing. It's a reissue. There's a lot of Bill Evans collectors out there, and these titles that are going for quite a bit of money on the collector's market. I'm sure you know that some of these, especially some of the Bill Evans records, are $200 or north of that.
I've heard. Boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you're reissuing Eric Dolphy Musical Prophet in the second pressing. Any consideration about going back to some of those Bill Evans ones, especially the ones that are very hard to get for collectors, and giving them a second look?
Absolutely. I mean, it really depends on the demand, and we do it when it's really warranted. You know, when the projects first started coming out, you know, sometimes they were, you know, the first Eric Dolphy release, by the way, was 3,000 units, and we shipped sold out, and I got harassing messages from people wanting to know, how could you press so few? And I said, we just wanted to make the right amount. It's a collectible thing. And it gave us a chance. We go back sometimes. Will we do other Bill Evans records? Well, we did reissue Live at the Top of the Gates a few years ago. We did reissue Some Other Time, which were fetching big numbers in the collector's markets. And I wanted to make that one available. We're certainly open to it. You know, I think it really is about a special instance of it being a recording where there's a demand and people really want to have it. But, you know, just to talk about this Bill, just to talk about the Eric Dolphy Musical Prophet release, there are some distinctions between the first and second pressing. First time around, we made 3,000 copies. Like I said, they went very quickly. That was engineered by Bernie Grundman. It was mastered by Grundman and pressed at RTI. And it had these beautiful photographs of Chuck Stewart on the front and back cover. And for this edition, starting with the cover, we took different photographs that hadn't been used, also by Chuck Stewart. There's continuity, these two wonderful pictures. But this time we mixed it up a little bit. Instead of Mr. Grundman, we used Kevin Gray, who everyone knows as Mr. Tome. You know, he works in all these tome poets with Joe Harley at Coherent Audio. Does an amazing job. Amazing. And this time we pressed it at an audiophile pressing plant that Resonance Records has been working with for a few years now, called LaVinylist, which is in Canada. And, you know, it says 180 gram on the sticker, but it might be actually, might even be a little closer sometimes to 200. The LaVinylist does these really lavish, beautiful pressings. They've been doing a really great job. And, you know, it's a different pressing altogether. It's a little bit of a different experience, but it was a way to bring it back out to the people that really wanted to have it, could get another crack at it. And, I mean, it's Eric. The 1960s, including recordings that hadn't been released before, with all this bonus material. I mean, recordings that we had found in Eric Dolphy's personal belongings that were with his friends. There's a whole story attached to the Dolphy, which was, again, I use these words, journeys, experiences. Working on Musical Profit was a great experience. Working with my co-producer, James Newton, who is a musician in his own right, composer, arranger, historian. And it was just a team effort. I'm really happy to see that back out. That needed to come back out again. But we don't always like to do that. You know, we don't. But we hear from enough people, I'm sure maybe we'll go that direction.
Yeah.
As a collector. As long as it allows it. Yeah.
Yeah. As a collector, you know, most of us like to go for those first pressings, those early records. There's some connections with those, you know, especially the lifetime pressings, the ones that are done within the artist's lifetime. But when it comes to Eric Dolphy, I prefer the more recent issues. Like, for instance, this recording, Musical Profit, has Iron Man in it. Iron Man was originally, I think the label was Douglas.
Yes, or Alan something. Douglas. Yeah. Same guy who worked with Hendrix.
Yeah, and those records, they were never, you know, there wasn't the investment in really nice pressings. It was kind of, let's put it out there and move on. So these pressings from the original master tapes have had the care and the attention and the modern record pressing technique. So the sound on these, even though they're not a lifetime pressing or a quote-unquote original pressing, to me, they're a much better experience just because of the audio quality is much more upfront. So that's the second pressing of Musical Profit. Can you hear the difference between the first and second?
I haven't A-B'd them. Oh, I'm sure there's somebody out there that could weigh in on this. But I think this one sounds great. I haven't played them back-to-back, though.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure someone will. All right. So those are the six releases for Record Store Day. Now, a couple of more general questions. We were talking about reissues. That Lee Morgan 12 LP set, has there been any discussion, any talk of reissuing that at some point?
Not that I've been involved with as of yet, but you never know what could happen. It certainly was what a feat making that project happen. Definitely one of the dreams come true in my career. But I don't know of anything yet out there. Yeah, but I love the fact that the music is readily available and now you can go through set by set like it happened. But that was an amazing release. Really appreciate everyone's support on that. I know there were a lot of very vocal fans when it came out and it was really nice.
And for those who may be not familiar with the history of this Lee Morgan 12 LP set, we had Zev on about a year ago talking about this project specifically. Now, when you're getting these tapes, are you often finding like really brittle, compromised tapes? Have you ever had something of like utmost historic importance that's unsalvageable?
Yeah, I did. It's happened. Not everything, I guess, is meant to come out. Boy, there were some tapes, believe it or not, this will break some hearts, from Clifford Brown and Max Roach that I had found. And there was a tape reel that was literally melted and couldn't be salvaged. There was nothing that we could do beyond baking, which is something that we do for certain tapes when it calls for it. But, you know, you find these tapes and sometimes they're in all sorts of different condition. And it's not often brittle. And it's usually about the way it was recorded and how the audio is. But it happens. But I can't help but think about that one time. And I think like the tape was parked on in a car on the property or something and was probably baking in the sun for years and years and years. Yeah, heartbreak, man. We don't want to talk about that. Let's not get everybody sad. But where there's one sad story, there's a lot of other good stories. And it's mostly been good stories, I think. You know, I mean, we're the phone is ringing and emails are coming in every day from people from around the world that are locating recordings. And I again want to encourage anyone that's out there that's listening. Hey, I'm curious. I know of something that's out there. Could be in a relative's attic or under their bed, or maybe you know someone that has something. I'm always excited to hear from people, and you can reach out to me on Instagram, on Facebook. I'm out there, and I would love to hear from you, but I just want to say again, for everything that I do, that it's because of the fans and the customers, the consumers, the people out there that are listening, like yourself also, that make this possible. It's a mission. And it takes so many different players to make it happen. And especially in the field, on the front lines, when it comes to people being interested in wanting to pick these up. I'm so grateful. And I want us to keep going, you know, and I'm hoping to.
How often do you hear about tapes? How often do people reach out to you and say, hey, I've got something here? Is this kind of a weekly thing more often? What's the strike rate on that?
It is pretty good strike rate. It seems like every month something's coming in. And it happens quite frequently. I haven't really counted, but it just seems like it happens enough where we hear from people online and people write to us. And I don't know, it's always exciting. You never know what message I'm going to get. And it gives me a reason literally to leap out of bed in the morning sometime with the messages that I get and waiting to hear back from people. I mean, it's an enjoyable process. It makes life very interesting. The days fly by very quickly, but I spend a lot of my time, Nate, doing research, even for existing archives, constantly going through and looking for things that I think might, you know, appeal to the people that buy these projects. And, you know, there's a lot of responsibility that goes in with that. You have to meet your enthusiasm also with numbers. We live and die by numbers, and especially when it's other people's money. And there's a lot of responsibilities, and it can have its own pressures along with that. But it's so enjoyable, and I'm having the best time. I can't believe it's what we're doing here.
Great. You know, we recently had on Janie Hendricks, who looks after the Jimi Hendricks archive. And through the episode, someone reached out. They had some material, some pictures and recordings of Jimmy that weren't part of the archive. So we were able to connect them. So hopefully we can do something very similar for you this time. Yeah, I know you're out there beating the drum, and people are getting to know what you do more and more. But it's always nice to be able to make those connections. Now, most of what you seem to be doing is aligned to jazz. How dedicated are you to those lanes? Would you go to blues or go beyond that? If we were able to find some sort of recording that's, you know, a rock recording or something like that, is that something that you'd be interested in? Or
I would. What's your lane? Oh my gosh. I love all the food groups. No, I mean, seriously, I love so much different types of music. It's really interesting. So let's talk about Deep Dig's music group for a second. So, you know, I've got my imprint Jazz Detective, but I'm not just a jazz guy. I collect classical piano recitals. I collect old blues. I collect classic rock. I mean, and of course, people know me for jazz, or you're lucky if people know you for anything in a positive way, you know, and it's really a nice thing. But when I started Deep Digs Music Group, I wanted to also create this imprint called Deep Digs. And I'm going to be releasing my first album from Deep Digs, which I think will give you an idea that it's not just about jazz. Later this year, we're going to be issuing recordings never before released from the legendary gospel singer and guitarist, the godmother of rock and roll, Sister Rosetta Tharpe. It's never been out before. And this will be in on Deep Digs. And this is going to be a wonderful release. It's going to have a deluxe curated booklet. It's going to knock you out. We'll get into that later, but I have recordings from the 1960s that had never been out before. And we have wonderfully professionally recorded tapes that actually come from the French government, from our good friends at INA, at INA. They oversaw the ORTF radio archives. That's like where my Albert Eiler tapes came from. They were recording all sorts of music there. But yeah, and you know, I'm love to put out some Lightning Hopkins if I could get my hands on something that's never been out. A lot of different types of music move me. I like to do a Sviatoslav Richter box set, maybe even reissuing albums from him. My tastes are so all over the place. It's hard to put me in one category. But again, people know you for one thing, and I'm happy about that. I mean, I get to do something that's so enjoyable. But I hope more so to be able to branch out more and more. I did do a Motown reissue series of Temptations albums reissued by Norman Whitfield a number of years back with the folks from Elemental. Those were actually CDs. But we were able to put stuff out, and it was an honor to be associated with those. Mm. So more on that soon, you know. But there's a lot of great music to be mined, and a lot of great stuff that's coming down the road too, by the way, Nate.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure there's many, many irons in the fire, and looking forward to hearing what's up your sleeve for later in the year for Record Store Day, Black Friday, and beyond. Well, there you go. If you have any tapes, not just jazz, but blues, rock, any other recordings you think that may be of interest to Zev and team, you could reach out to him on social media. Of course, his links will be in this episode page. And there's 6 releases out for Record Store Day: Bill Evans Treasures, Chet Baker Blue Room, Eric Dolphy Musical Prophet, the second pressing, Shirley Scott at the Left Bank, Sonny Stitt at the Left Bank, and Walter Bishop Jr., Bish at the Bank, Record Store Day, April 22nd. Zev, thank you so much, not just for your time today, but for all you do, because you really do enrich the lives of us music nerds. So thank you again, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And there he is, Mr. Zev Feldman. Thank you, Zev, for swinging by the Vinyl Guide. Lots of releases on Record Store Day. Don't forget to grab those when you see them in the shops. You know, most of them sell out on the first day, and they become quite collectible. So make sure you scoop them up. Otherwise, you know, you may be sorry later when you got to pay Discogs prices on something that you had in your hands and you let slip away. So don't make that mistake. April 22nd, Record Store Day. Grab some Zev Feldman-produced records and enjoy. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Put them on Facebook, send them to the Facebook groups, put them on Reddit, show your friends how to get the podcast on that smartphone of theirs. That is always appreciated. You could always leave us a positive review. We love positive reviews. That's our fuel. That's our fuel for happiness. Just log on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and give us 5 out of 5 stars and you say something nice. Oh man, that just takes us to the moon. Thanks in advance for that. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.